Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
This is NPR News, and I'm Angela Davis. Good to have you join us. Early this summer, for a hot minute, it looked like we might be emerging from COVID-19. New cases had plummeted. We hopped on airplanes, headed to ball games, and got back together with friends. And we looked forward to a fall of somewhat normal activity. Now, fall is almost here, and once again, we're in the grip of the pandemic. State health officials say we're in a fourth wave driven by the contagious Delta variant and large numbers of unvaccinated Minnesotans. Debates about masks and vaccines are splitting school boards and families. The threat of new variants is on the horizon. Some experts predict the pandemic will ease, while others say it's going to get worse in the next couple of months. We have two guests with us for the next hour to help us talk about how to manage this latest wave. And the phone lines are open. What questions do you have about vaccines, booster shots, the Delta variant, or what precautions make sense in this new phase of the pandemic? And how are you handling the mental health strain? Are you feeling anxious or maybe just weary? With us is Dr. Greg Poland, an infectious disease doctor and head of Mayo Clinic's Vaccine Research Group. We're fortunate to have one of the top experts in vaccines joining us. He's consulted on a number of the COVID-19 vaccines. Good morning to you, Dr. Poland.
Good morning, Angela. Thank you for introducing me and allowing me to be here.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time. I'm also happy to welcome back Bravada Garrett Akinsanya, or Dr. B, as she is known. Dr. B is a clinical psychologist in Plymouth who specializes in African-American mental health, and she's been a frequent guest on my show for the past year and a half. Hi there, Dr. B.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
All right. Thank you for joining us. Dr. Poland, let's start with you. When you look at the increase in COVID-19 cases right now, what do you see as the main reasons it continues to spread?
Well, number one, this is a highly infectious and therefore transmissible virus. Number two, you know, as you travel around the state, it amazes me. People are not wearing masks, and the data are very, very clear here that wearing a mask and being fully vaccinated offers you superior protection against getting sick with this. Where you reject science as a way of dealing with a science/medical problem, then you get into the problems that we're having not only in Minnesota, but across the nation.
And Dr. Poland, don't you feel, though, it's because the pandemic has been prolonged? I mean, people may understand and agree with the science, but in some ways, they're just over it. They just don't want to take these steps anymore.
Yeah, and I do understand that. My daughter's a mental health and trauma specialist, and we talk and write about this quite a bit. I think you ultimately have to think about a number of things, and Dr. B can comment here, but one is helping to build resilience in individuals and in communities, and there are a lot of factors that degrade our resilience. The second is to say, okay, this is short-term defined as, is this going to be 2 years, 2.5 years, something like that? But is it worth it to follow this advice in order to preserve my life, my health, my long-term well-being, and that of my family and of my community? And certainly for somebody like me, that answer is a clear yes.
Dr. B, what are you seeing and hearing from people who are turning to you for help about how the resurgence in cases is affecting their mental health?
I'm hearing quite a bit. Already we have experienced a difficulty, especially in multicultural communities, a difficulty even complying with the original request to get the vaccine. And so there's a lot of, I call it pandemic fatigue. Mm-hmm. People do want it to be over. They feel like they've suffered long enough without those human connections. But one of the larger pieces in addition to that I see is that people are distrusting the science. And because they now have more and more examples of people who say that, oh, I got COVID, it wasn't that bad. Or, you know, I did get to the hospital, but, you know, I'm not going to take the vaccine. That was just too much. So people are actually listening to survivors of COVID, and they're giving that more credence than the probability that if I get COVID, what can happen to me? And is that a risk I'm willing to take? Am I afraid enough that I won't get COVID that I'd make differences, choices in my behaviors? So that's one part. The second part is people have grieved a long time. They've grieved the loss of people who have died from the disease. They're grieving the loss of control of their lives. And there's an anticipatory grief that I like to talk about, that people are grieving what their life would be like if they mm-hmm. continue to placate to the disease or change their lives in a way that they're not touching or connecting friends and families. So like this year when the fair was going on, I looked at the television. I mean, there were 50 people, maybe two of them had masks on. And even though they're outside, it's so packed that if somebody sneezes, it's not like just because I'm outside, the sneeze is going to, you know, decide it's not going to fall on my face. So people, they're just not using the best judgment. Mm.
And Dr. Poland, since she's mentioned the state fair, what do you think? Do you think we'll see a jump in infection stemming from the Minnesota State Fair?
It's certainly likely. But interestingly enough, and we cannot always explain it, some events end up being super spreader events. Sturgis in South Dakota is, I think, going to turn out to be one of those events. And other events, Lollapalooza in Chicago, turn out to not have been highly significant drivers of the outbreak. So it really depends on whether super spreaders are present, which variant we're talking about, what percent of the people in that environment have been vaccinated, and then other things like wind speed, vapor pressure, humidity, temperature, amount of sunlight or UV exposure. And mm-hmm. that's a complicated equation mm-hmm. and therefore hard to predict.
And that said, do you think people should be attending large gatherings this fall? I mean, things like football games or conferences even?
No, it just doesn't make sense to me. And I know people emotionally want to. I get that. And as my daughter often says, a part of what's happening here, and Dr. B is right when she mentions a feeling of loss of control, and that's very reminiscent of what people feel and recall as trauma. This has been a national and global trauma for all of us, and this trauma just keeps going on and on. But I would encourage people, there are positive steps that you can take, like masking and vaccination. And we shouldn't think of it as an off-on phenomena. In other words, if I'm fully vaccinated, there's a lot I can do with other people. I may have to wear a mask, or with other friends of mine that are vaccinated, we can be outdoors and do things together. So, you know, people tend to have this kind of on-off thinking and then extrapolate to how bad it is. This is bad. I'm not trying to say it isn't, but I am trying to say that there are really positive steps that people can take that not only protect their health and build resilience, but give them back some of this sense of control.
We're talking about living through the COVID-19 pandemic. I have a long list of questions for our two doctors on the line, but I want to bring in some of our listeners as well who are calling in. Right now, let's take a call from Osseo, where Roy is on the phone. Good morning, Roy. What did you want to ask or share?
Yes. The things I see from coworkers is that they had gotten COVID in the past and they don't want to get vaccinated, whereas the rest of us are getting vaccinated at the workplace, and obviously that affects schools as well. So how do we deal with the situation?
Okay, Roy's breaking up there. It sounds like he has a question about vaccines and getting vaccinated. And Dr. Poland, you know, we're hearing a lot about breakthrough infections. That's getting a lot of attention. What can you tell us about the risk of still getting COVID-19 if I'm fully vaccinated?
Yeah, you know, we hear a lot about it, but that's not the same thing as is it happening a lot. In fact, the numbers show that if you're fully vaccinated, your risk of dying, of having severe disease, or of getting hospitalized is really low. It's just that you hear about that in the media. Now, your risk of getting mild or asymptomatic infection is higher, and yes, you can probably still spread that infection. The other thing, and I think maybe it's what Roy was getting at, is even if you were infected, say, last year and recovered from that, what the data show is that if you don't get immunized, you run a risk of about 2.3 times higher of getting reinfected than somebody who had been infected in the past but did go ahead and get vaccinated. And sometimes that second infection can be worse, and we are dealing with a worse variant now than a year ago.
And I am hearing a lot of people who's like, oh, I've already had COVID. So they, in many ways, I think, feel sort of fearless.
And that would be, that really would be wrong thinking. Maybe a simple way to think about it, and I am simplifying here, but the virus you might have gotten infected with a year ago is a very different virus than the virus that's circulating today.
And Dr. B, what do you think about the impact of breakthrough infections? Folks are hearing about, I mean, I know people who were fully vaccinated, still got COVID. What is that doing to the just the mental health decline that we're seeing?
It's kind of like a tidal wave that's happening. Most of the people that I see are when I do work in the community, they talk about the fact that they did see, know somebody who had it. And, you know, they got the shot and they got sick again. And one of the things that I talk to people is that, let's say they do and they get it again. Those people are at a decreased risk of dying. You might get sick, but you likely won't die. And so when people get ready to talk about that vaccine, my group that's in the community now, we're talking to them about, is it a risk you want to take? What if you throw the dice and you get the disease because you didn't get the shot? Are you able to be comfortable with knowing that your children don't have a parent if you die? Are you the only parent who would take care of them if something happens to you? And you're going to tell me you're going to get a shot? Let a shot increase your risk of not being around when a shot can decrease your risk and assure that you are probably going to be around. So that's kind of the logic. I don't try to talk people into it. I tell them about the science. They can read. I tell them that. But the most important thing that we find as psychologists, our research tells us, that you let people understand that every time they say no, they are making a choice. They can choose yes, or they can choose no. So your control is within the decision-making process of whether you say yes or no. And then the second piece is to have people think about what are the consequences with a no, what are the consequences with a yes. And I want the listeners to hear that clearly, that each time you choose, you have to think about what risk are going to occur with or without taking the vaccine. And then are you willing to play those odds?
Let's take another phone call from a listener as we talk about the COVID-19 pandemic and trying to live through it, this prolonged period. In White Bear Lake, we've got Kyle on the line. Hi, Kyle.
Hello.
Hi. What did you want to ask or share?
Yeah, so I'm a stay-at-home dad, and we've got a five-month-old. So I'm just curious on, you know, it'd be nice to go to the apple orchard or go do things, but our little one had respiratory problems when he was born. So sort of, you know, what does that look like in the long term? And then also just like, is he building his immune system now? And if we don't go to these places, is he not going to build it? So just a couple thoughts, I guess.
All right. Thank you, Kyle. In White Bear Lake, Dr. Poland asking about a five-month-old baby and an outdoor setting. Is that safe to do? We know that the children under 12 are not vaccinated. What would you tell Kyle?
Yeah, Kyle is sympathetic, and, you know, what a good dad. You're asking about that and thinking about that, and that's very valid. What I would say is, you know, we still want children to have as normal a looking childhood during this, you know, next month to a year as possible. Now, having had pre-existing respiratory problems does increase the risk, but I think you're very safe in going to uncrowded outdoor environments. You mentioned an apple orchard. By all means, go as a family. Enjoy that. Where the risk occurs is when you're indoors or where you are in very crowded indoor settings. Outdoor settings. So, for example, I was asked about going to a football game. Well, that's riskier than walking around as a family in an apple orchard, which I would consider of essentially no risk. So you know, you have to sort of discern what kind of crowding is going to be there. Is it going to be indoors and or outdoors? I would not, under any circumstance, try to put a mask on a five-month-old. Better is for the older people in the family to wear a mask and to be those that can be vaccinated to be vaccinated, sort of forming a protective cocoon around that child.
As we talk about the children, Dr. B, I want to read a message I'm getting on Twitter. This is from Sarah. Sarah writes, I have children under five and feel so helpless and abandoned by our governments, businesses, and community. Why do we think we don't need mask mandates anymore when large numbers of our community do not yet have access to vaccines? And as I think about all the kids going back to school in the classroom, and I think about and I see these families with young children out in the community, I really think about the stress that they must be under. And Dr. B, what would you say to the parents of small children right now?
I first say I understand the anxiety and the fear, and that it's a very realistic one if they're not taking the steps that the doctor just described, protecting them, being a shield around them, making sure that they engage with loved ones who are vaccinated, and understanding, more importantly, that they're babies, they're vulnerable, they can't decide for themselves where to go, what to do. And if any of you know about having 4 or 5 year olds, even if you tell them what to do, that doesn't mean they're going to do it. So the most important thing we can do is keep them safe. And I like the idea of kind of cocooning them, because in these early years, the stimuli that they get in the environment is really important. So at home as well as in the community, letting them see things, experience the world, going on nature walks, those are really great ideas that you can do safely with your kids. And I also want to say, I understand that people are frustrated with the decision making of our colleagues and our community members who really may be less risk aversive than some of us and who may not have other people to think about in their lives, and they're not as community minded. Maybe that if I get it, I could spread it. So it's always going to be groups of people like that, but you act as if everybody you know around you has COVID unless they tell you they've got a vaccine. And if that happens, then what you're going to do is attach with your baby. Because in these years, these early years, attachment with reliable, loving adults is probably the most important thing that can happen. And even though it's been hard to stay at home, and especially when we were in positions where we could work from home, the the intimacy and the availability that you have with your children is actually, if you look at it, it's a gift that we rarely have.
It has
because
value.
Most of the time, right, we get those babies and we have to put them in child care or something, and we don't get to be there with them. So just kind of do some cognitive reframing and see part of this process as a gift of the glass being half full as opposed to half empty.
Let's take another phone call from a listener as we talk about the COVID-19 pandemic in Minneapolis. Julie's on the phone. Hi, Julie.
Hi, good morning. What a great topic. See, I have a bit of a concern about how the information is being collected. And this is just a personal observation. It certainly isn't any scientific data. But my best friend was at the Lakeville Food and Wine event a couple weekends ago with her family. And her son, her daughter-in-law, her 8-month-old, and her 2-year-old grandchildren all came down with COVID. And they were all vaccinated except for the children. And so they were mostly breakthrough cases. A couple of my coworkers have come through with breakthrough cases as well. Nobody is getting this information reported to the Minnesota Department of Health. Nobody asked them, you know, have you been vaccinated? Is this a breakthrough case? None of that information is being tracked by the people that I know. So my concern is the lag in information that's being published and reported, and what is actually transpiring out in the environment that we're living in.
What's being documented and tracked as far as breakthrough cases. Dr. Poland, what can you say about that? Are we keeping track of this and documenting
it?
Yeah.
So I would say, Julie, you made a very astute and very cogent and very correct observation. The United States, I think, unfortunately, made the decision to only track breakthrough infections that resulted in death, hospitalization, severe disease. Where we get data on breakthrough infection that's more mild is in the context of clinical studies. And a lot of those studies have come actually from other countries, the UK and Israel in particular. But we do have data. We do get good data. We just don't know the magnitude of the problem at the population level. Again, I think that's a mistake because that's helpful information in understanding, for example, whether we need booster doses and who needs them.
Dr. Poland, what can you tell us now? What do we know now about the efficacy of the vaccines that are out there? Because it seems like early on we were hearing, it's like Moderna and Pfizer, 96, 99% effective. Now I don't hear the same numbers. What can you tell us?
Yeah, well, you know, we lose about 10% or so efficacy in the face of the Delta variant. Nonetheless, they remain extraordinarily effective in preventing, as I have mentioned, death, severe disease, and hospitalization. You know, your risk of dying if you have an otherwise normal immune system after being fully vaccinated and then having a breakthrough infection is on the order of 0.004%. I mean, that's really astounding technology when you think of it. But these vaccines have been designed, and this is a critical distinction for people to understand. They are designed as disease blocking, not necessarily infection blocking. So in other words, the vaccines are designed to prevent you from getting sick, from being hospitalized or dying. They are not as good at preventing you from having asymptomatic or mild infection. Mm-hmm. That further gets degraded, if you will, over time from your last dose of vaccine, your state of health, and in the face of an ever-increasing number of new variants. So if we go back in time, if we had said everybody gets a vaccine, everybody wears a mask, and everybody isolates for 3 weeks, and we didn't allow people into the country who had not been vaccinated or tested, we would not have COVID. But we decided against a strategy like that and left it to everybody's choice. And you have to recognize that, particularly in the U.S., more generally true in Western cultures, we are narcissistic. We are a me rather than a we society. And you see people, even within families, making decisions that may or may not benefit them and yet offer substantial risk to other members of their family or their community or workplace or place of worship. So, you know, pandemics are things where we are either all in it together and agree to fight this in the way it deserves to be fought against, or we just individually take our own selfish view of things, not really balancing risk and benefit appropriately, and we get what we're seeing.
Dr. B, what do you think of that statement Dr. Poland just made, that we're living in a me rather than a we society?
I think he's very accurate, because the dominant culture of America is to pull oneself up for one's own bootstrap. We have the individualism that's a core component of the American dominant cultural belief. And what's so strange is that the communities that are most disproportionately affected, African-American, BIPOC communities, those groups generally have a different perspective, and their perspectives are more collectivist values in their communities versus individualistic, but they tend to still have problems. And so I want to just point out that one of the things that's happening is that there is not a cultural, and I say in BIPOC communities especially, there's not a cultural faith in what we describe as dominant culture, white science. And the only way that those of us from those communities are able to influence our brothers and sisters is by our own modeling and teaching, by explaining to them. I know we've got the Tuskegee study on syphilis where we couldn't trust the government. I know this is what you believe, but look at me. I took it. I'm fine. Nothing fell off of me. I've got all body parts, and I want to make sure that you know I love you, and you are my brother and sister, and I want you to be well. And even if we think about the larger values of our country, the Latin phrase, e pluribus unum, out of many, we are one. And people who are saying, I'm an American, I have the right to choose what I want to do with my body, and we have selected discussion about that. But the key is, if we remember that overarching value, that we may even be diverse, but what one person does affects the many, realizing our personal power and the gift of our lives to bring health and healing, not just for ourselves, but for everyone. Each of us has that power, and that's why it's so important for us to have a cognitive shift in terms of who we are and the power we think we actually possess.
We're talking about dealing with the fatigue, the uncertainty, and the fear brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic, and we want to hear from you. The phone lines are open. What questions do you have about vaccines, booster shots, the Delta variant, or what precautions make sense in this new phase of the COVID-19 pandemic, and how are you handling the mental health strain? Right now in Willmar, let's talk to Tony. Tony, thank you for waiting. What did you want to share?
Thank you so much for putting me through.
Sure.
I just have a question for Dr. Poland. I just want to stress that my family's not an anti-vax family. My son is a captain in the Army. He was made to get the vaccines. My daughter, who goes to a private college here in Minnesota, her college required her to get the Moderna, and so they did it. Nothing, they haven't fallen apart. They haven't gotten sick. My question for the infectious disease doctor is this. I've had COVID along with everybody else in my family, including the two people aforementioned. But I can prove when I go to give blood, like when I went to give blood for Red Cross, and I can prove by going and getting an over-the-counter thing that I have antibodies built up. My question is, why is it the mandate for pretty much all or none. It's fully vaccinated or like I didn't even have, like I don't even have any antibodies. I heard the doctor say that there's a percentage, but I want to know why it's not even discussed that you have, you know, your a natural immunity built up in your system, but nobody, including Anthony Fauci or anybody, even mentions it.
So, Tony, you're asking about, like, why isn't there more value placed on having antibodies built up in your system?
That's exactly okay. what I'm asking.
All right. Dr. Poland, yeah. what can you say to that?
Yeah, really good question. By the way, Tony, thank you for your son's service. We have a son in the military, too, so I know the sacrifices that are made. The military is a good example of we, not me. So the straightforward answer to your question is it is discussed in scientific circles. And the basic understanding is that the breakthrough rate, if you will, of infection is so much higher in people who previously were infected and don't get vaccinated versus people who were previously vaccinated and get at least one dose of vaccine. And again, the reason for that is that the virus that you may have gotten infected with a year ago, the Wuhan ancestral strain, is very different than the mutated variants that are circulating today, like the Delta virus or Delta variant. And so that's the reason for the recommendation for vaccination.
Dr. Poland, in a talk last month at Mayo Clinic to the staff, you said, quote, "We're in a desperate but barely noticed race of variants versus vaccines." What did you mean by that?
It's really the idea that it almost seems as a nation that we've lost our capacity for critical reasoning. As Dr. B has pointed out from the psychological side, and I'll point out from the scientific side, this is an infection. Think of it. In January of 2020, if you and I had stood at the edge of America and looked from one coast to the other, could you even imagine that I would be telling you that one out of every 490 Americans will be dead of COVID 18 months from now? And I could have prevented that with a 25-cent mask and a vaccine. It's almost inconceivable. We've done an experiment in this country where we've banned masks in the context of the worst pandemic seen in any of our lifetimes with the worst variant we've seen and said, let's jam kids together in school and see what happens. Well, we know what has happened. 27% of last week's new cases were in kids. Over 250,000 new infections in children. Thankfully, they tend not to get hospitalized or die. An unfortunate few do. But all of that is preventable with masking and vaccines, and yet we choose not to do it.
And I want to get that stat again. You're saying about 1/4 of the new cases last week, the new COVID infections were in children?
Were in children, yes.
Dr. B, I want to ask you about anger. We're seeing a lot more of it. Anger against people who are not vaccinated, anger against the vaccine mandates. Why are we seeing so much anger, do you think? And what do we do with it?
Well, Angela, as a psychologist, what I've discovered over the years is that anger is always the second emotion. Something happens, and then we feel anger. We feel helpless, then we feel angry. We feel locked in, then we feel angry. We feel not heard, then we get angry. So what I want to engage our community in is thinking about what is the feeling behind the anger. Is it fear? Is it hopelessness? Is it helplessness? Is it, again, that lack of control? And when we get to that original feeling, whatever leads to that anger, that's what we need to deal with. Is it that insecurity that I can't do what I want to do? Then if that's the problem, let's deal with that problem. And I'm not saying that people don't have a righteous anger for a lot of things, because anger is good and useful. especially when you use that anger and it propels you to do a healthy behavior. It propels you if you're overweight and you're angry about it, then that will propel you to eat better, make better choices in what you do with your body. So I want to say to our community that if you are angry, think about why. That's all I want you to do is think about what's behind it, and then let's tackle that together.
Let's take another phone call from a listener as we talk about the prolonged pandemic in St. Paul. Sarah is on the phone. Good morning to you, Sarah.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate the discussion so much, particularly about the children under five. And that's kind of what my question is. You know, experts, if you were looking at a child care center for a family member, you know, under five, grandchildren or children, what would be like the most important COVID mitigation strategy?
Oh, I think we lost Sarah. Okay, there you are. Yeah, we hear a lot about the recommendations for schools. You don't hear so much about recommendations for child care centers. And Dr. Poland, what would you like to see happen in that setting?
Yeah, it's interesting. My daughter asked me what we would have done if they were young children today and facing this. You know, I think there's some, let me give some parameters to think about. Are the staff vaccinated and masked? Mm-hmm. Do they have a strict protocol around kids not being brought into daycare that have fever or upper respiratory type symptoms? How big of a group are we talking about? 3 kids or 30 kids? Those would be important questions to me. What kind of environment is it? Is it well ventilated? Do they clean the toys after each day's use? Those would be the kinds of things that I would think about. In regards to vaccinating kids, let me offer a ray of hope here. It looks like an EUA for Pfizer will be more than likely granted by the end of this month for 5 to 11-year-olds. When we get to the 6-month-old to 5-year-old kids, that will lag. They will be different doses than adults are given. But there's a ray of hope here that we may get the EUA for younger children a little sooner than we thought was going to happen.
And that will have a tremendous impact.
Oh, yes. Right. Yes.
Let's take another phone call. Let's talk to Suzanne, who's in Rochester. Suzanne, thank you for waiting.
Oh, thank you. This has been really helpful for me. And both of your guests have addressed what I'm dealing with right now, which is anger towards my favorite loved young ones, 30 and 40, with teenagers. One, a respiratory therapist who's working in Texas for the second time, watching people die of COVID, who told me he was a carrier a year and a half ago because he worked on some of the first patients at Cleveland Hospital in Florida, who refuses to be vaccinated because he believes in natural immunity.
And he's a healthcare worker, Suzanne?
Yes. Okay. Based on his research on the web, and another professional dancer in Minneapolis who doesn't trust the CDC, doesn't trust the government, and flounders on the internet looking at anti-vaxxer family doctors in Indiana who she thinks has something important to say, who to me is just an idiot.
And
so
Suzanne,
you can hear my
this is
my
these are your family members. These are your family members.
These are a goddaughter mm-hmm. and a surrogate son.
Okay. Of people you care about. And yes, Suzanne, I hear the wariness in your voice. Dr. B, we know that this situation has caused a lot of tension in many families. And is this something you hear among your clients and in your network?
Yes, and I especially want to tell her thank you for caring so much and for sharing that, because I think her story is very, unfortunately, is very common. Mm-hmm. And the way that I think that we address things like that is to really get to the bottom of it and say, don't you know I'm scared? I'm scared for you. And I'm angry because you're not seeing how precious you are to me and what a risk you're taking. Your life isn't just your own. You're a part of me, and I'm a part of you. And even if you don't trust the government, don't you trust me? And so I think getting to that conversation about the value of their lives to you, and even if they choose not to do it, you have told them why you're afraid, and you've asked them to do it. You know, maybe if they don't have enough concern for themselves, do they have enough concern that they're hurting and scaring you when they don't do it? And so I think it's important to have those conversations. And it's very common that we are having to have grandmas and aunts and coaches and different people in the lives of even little kids all the way up to geriatrics saying to their relatives that you matter to me, I love you. And I am angry and afraid. I'm angry because I'm afraid, and you're not thinking about what your life means to me.
Dr. Poland, how is this prolonged pandemic affecting doctors and nurses and other people who work in health care? What have you seen among your colleagues and friends?
Yeah. I think what we can say nationwide is, and, you know, I have two daughter-in-laws that are nurses, one who flew to California and then to Chicago to work in COVID units. People are getting burned out and exhausted. We see things that ought never have happened to people happen. And the irony is, as one colleague told me, he admitted a patient with COVID who deteriorated, had to go to the ICU and likely had to be intubated, who had rejected masks and vaccines, who looked at him and said, I want you to do everything that science knows to do to save me. And yet he had rejected the most simple things. So this is really hard. You look in the state of Idaho, you may have seen the headlines. They are now at a place, and this is very, very hard. It is a moral outrage to healthcare providers, and it is traumatic. We're going to see a generation of healthcare providers, I think, with PTSD from this. Yeah. In Idaho, they're now having to ration healthcare. And this is something we have not really had to do in the U.S. on a scale like this, to basically say, we can't see you in the ER, or I'm sorry, there's not a ventilator for you, because of the surge demand with one after another rejecting the science, getting sick. And the irony is, what do? They come back to science to save their lives. Mm-hmm. And this is very frustrating for us. I love the way Dr. B put this, that anger is the second emotion. I hadn't thought of it that way. I sometimes feel anger, and it is over the sadness and the lack of kind of respecting that I have spent my life trying to prevent illness and to relieve suffering, and to watch people deliberately walk into the fire when they don't need to, and even if they survive it, to be left with chronic symptoms that will degrade the quality of their life, again, when none of this need have happened.
Dr. B, what are your concerns about healthcare workers? I have a cousin who's an ICU nurse in North Carolina who I recently spent time with, and it requires a lot of passion and patience in their work.
Yeah, I think they do have a lot of pain, and with this disease, they have seen so much that they normally would not see, mm-hmm. and so every day going to work, especially those who are in the units that are in the COVID units, they leave the office, I mean the hospital, feeling mm-hmm. just defeated, and just like mm-hmm. the doctor was saying, they have worked their whole lives trying to help others and trying to preserve life, and to not be able to do that is a real sense of loss and helplessness, and it does directly contribute to trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder. That's one part. And then the second part about the health care workers who choose not to do it. Again, I think that they are making those decisions based on something
that is not to do it. You mean get vaccinated?
Yeah, not to get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. They are basing their decisions on an emotional thing and a lack of knowledge. And even if they have and know better, there's something going on internally about control that they need to talk out. And so that's why a lot of us are holding circles for doctors and nurses and police officers, first responders, so they can have a safe place to talk mm-hmm. and talk it out.
Before we run out of time, I want to take one more phone call from a listener in Minneapolis. Kelly is on the line. Kelly, go right ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate that we can go on the MDH website and see the breakthrough cases. However, I would love if we could see what vaccine the breakthrough cases received, because I'm a person who had the Johnson & Johnson, and I feel anxious and a little lost because there is just not very much information about the Johnson & Johnson. I don't know, is there going to be a booster, or would I take a Pfizer booster? Mm-hmm. So I'd just like to maybe hear some
J&J news. Right. Dr. Poland, what can you tell us about folks who got the Johnson & Johnson?
Kelly, good question, and I understand that anxiety, because most of the discussion has been around the mRNA vaccine. So boosters with something other than you got before are kind of called mix-and-match studies. Those studies are ongoing. J&J themselves are doing a second dose study called the Ensemble study, if you want to look that up. And I suspect that they will work their way toward a second dose. But J&J got their EUA approval way behind Pfizer and then Moderna. And it's been a relatively smaller number that have gotten that vaccine. And so those data are lagging, though being collected. So we will know in time.
Our time is up for today, but we know this is a conversation that we will pick up and have again. And I want to thank our two guests. You've been so wonderful, so helpful, and thank all of our listeners as well who called in with their thoughts and questions. Our guest today, Dr. Greg Poland, an infectious disease doctor and head of Mayo Clinic's Vaccine Research Group, and Dr. B, Bravada Garrett Ankinsanya, who's a clinical psychologist in Plymouth, who specializes in African-American mental health. Today's conversation was produced by Maya Beckstrom. Be safe, everyone, and I'll talk to you tomorrow at 9. Hi, I'm Angela Davis, and you just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet me at Angela Davis NPR. If you missed us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening.